Good evening and welcome to the Skeena Buckley Rally All Candidates Debate 2021, coming live to you from the R.E. Emily Theatre in Terrace. I'm Billy Mary Paul from the Terrace Standard, and I'd like to start by acknowledging that we are on the traditional unceded territory of the Tsimshian people. Today's forum is hosted by the Terrace Standard and co-sponsored by the R.E. Emily Theatre. Unfortunately, due to COVID, we were unable to open the doors to the public this year. However, we have included some of the questions from the residents of the riding into our segments tonight. For those unable to watch the live event, a recording will be broadcast on City West Channel 10 on Friday, September 10 at 7 p.m. We have with us our five candidates this evening: Claire Rette from the Conservative Party of Canada, Roy Taylor from the Christian Heritage Party, Taylor Beckrack from the New Democratic Party, Jody Craven from the People's Party of Canada, and Adina Young from the Green Party of Canada, joining us from Haida-Gwaii. You guys can wave if you want. A warm welcome to each of you. Five journalists from media houses across Northwest BC will be moderating the segments tonight. We have with us Tom Barker from Smithers Interior News, John Crawford from Bell Media, Jeff Blackton from CFNR, Matthew Allen from CBC, and myself, Benny Paul from Terrace Standard. The forum will be divided into five segments. Candidates will be questioned on matters relevant to the Skeena Buckley Valley with regards to industry, climate change, Indigenous issues, social issues, and of course, COVID-19. Moving on to the rules of the meeting, each candidate will have 3 minutes to present an opening statement and closing statement. Ms. Olivia Koff from Blackbirds Media will be monitoring the time at this evening. Moderators and candidates, please be mindful when Ms. Koff raises her time card. Candidates will be asked a question in each of the segments and will have 1 minute and 30 seconds to respond. If another candidate wants to answer or respond, they can raise their rebuttal cards and will have the floor for 1 minute. A response time of 30 seconds will be provided to rebuttals at moderator's discretion. Each candidate has 5 rebuttal cards along with 1 bonus rebuttal for the COVID-19 segment. That's all for the rules. Good luck to each of you. Mr. Barker, you have the floor.
Hello, I am Tom Barker from the Interior News in Smithers. The candidates will start with opening statements for which they have 3 minutes. I'm not aware of the order, so we'll begin with Jody Craven from the People's Party of Canada.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jody Craven from People's Party of Canada. First of all, I'd especially thank my teammates, my campaign manager, and everybody involved in our campaign. I just went through a big ordeal through the hospital. They pulled through for me. I got medevac to Prince Rupert from Smithers and had emergency surgery, and my team pulled through for me for the last week here. I'm on the recovery, but I'll be out on the road, hitting the road hard with my team. Look forward to meeting everyone. So first of all, I'd like to say People's Party of Canada, we're totally against the vaccine passport. Want to make that clear. People's Party of Canada, right? We've been participating in freedom marches across Canada almost on a weekly basis against this tyranny government. We're fighting for Canadians' freedoms. We don't want to give it up. I know Mr. Rod Taylor was in some of these marches too, but not one of the other parties in Canada stood up for 1 second one second on the stage for Fight for Canadian Freedoms, not even one word. We're in a big crisis here in Canada, right? We gotta get Canada back on track. All this mandatory stuff is totally illegal. So I'm sure we'll be touching bases on this, all this stuff tonight. Jody, I've been very active in the last 2 years. I finished my social worker program at the college here. And I volunteered, about 3 months at a food bank in Kitimat. And I got to meet a lot of people in this riding and people that needed help. We are in a crisis stage for our people. So anyways, I'll tell you a little story. Last year, one of my classmates came up to me and said, "Jody, you don't look like a typical politician." I said, "Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. You know, I don't look like a drama teacher. Not at all, right? I'm a blue-collar worker. Been a blue-collar worker all my life. Haven't been privileged. Worked for everything I earned. Worked for everything I own." So that's on the People's Party of Canada side. We're all about freedom and protecting your rights. Thank you very much.
Next up is Taylor Backer from the NDP.
Thank you and good evening. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the unceded lands of the Tsimshian people, especially the people of Kitsimkalem and Kitsilis, and to thank the organizers of tonight's event. It's an important one. Over the past 2 years, I've had the privilege of talking to thousands of people across Northwest BC, and over the past month, I've talked to hundreds of you on your doorstep. And I always ask how you're doing. Most folks are hanging in there. You know, Northwest BC has fared better than many parts of the country during these exceptionally challenging times. But people are tired, and people are frustrated, and people are worried. Not just about the pandemic, they're frustrated and worried because we're living in a time in history when there are some big issues that we face. This year, an entire community in British Columbia burned to the ground, and 550 people in the Lower Mainland died from extreme heat. We need to tackle the climate crisis with the seriousness it deserves, like never before. The number of unmarked burial sites, these are the graves of kids that were taken from their families, that number has climbed to over 6,000. I know that we're going to rise to these challenges, this challenging time that we're in, the way that we always have in the Northwest, and that's together. I know everyone out there remembers stories of people coming together in community, families that have been struck by cancer and had their neighbors come together and support them, people who've lost their houses to fire and have seen the same kind of mutual support. We need that spirit now more than ever, and it's who we are here in the Northwest. It's been an honor. It is an honor to serve as your Member of Parliament and to fight for you every day in Ottawa, to bring the voice of this place, the voice of Skeena, to the country's capital. I'm looking forward to tonight's conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up is Claire Rattay from the Conservative Party of Canada.
Thank you, Tom. I'd like to start by thanking the organizers of this event. It's important for the constituents to be able to have an opportunity to be able to listen to all of the candidates. My name is Claire Rattay. I'm a Conservative Party candidate here in Skeena Bulkley Valley. I'm a small business owner. I served a term on City Council in Kitimat, and I'm a regular, hardworking Canadian just like the rest of you. I know what it's like to struggle to make ends meet, and I understand the value of hard work. I'm not doing this because I'm looking for a career. I have one already that I love. I'm doing this because I see a need in our communities, and I'm not one to complain about something and not do anything to fix it. I'm running again because I care about the people in Skeena Bulkley Valley, and it's time for a fresh start and the representation that we deserve. After nearly two decades of NDP representation, they've achieved very little progress for our communities. We deserve a strong and passionate voice in Ottawa, advocating for us, not propping up the Liberal government and paying us lip service at election time. Our current MP voted with Trudeau 47 out of 58 times so far in Parliament, and the Trudeau Liberals clearly don't love this country or the Canadians that they represent, and propping up their government shows where loyalties lie. I say it's time for a fresh start and a representative that is working for the people of Skeena-Bulkley Valley and not against them. We have so much potential, and I know that we can become prosperous with effective representation that is willing to do the hard work and find ways that we can work together to bring a united front to Ottawa. So I hope that I can count on your support, and thank you for taking the time to get involved and watching tonight's debate.
Thank you, Claire. Next up is Rod Taylor from the Christian Heritage Party.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for taking the time to hear from the candidates tonight, and thank you to the Terrace Standard and all those who helped organize this forum. When Canadians last went to the polls less than 2 years ago, nobody could foresee the troubles that lay ahead. COVID brought with it sickness and tragic deaths, but the greatest threat to our democracy came not from the virus itself, but from the inappropriate overreaction of our provincial and federal governments. Truth is the first casualty in any war, and this is true in the war against COVID. Canadians are now being coerced with vaccine passports, in spite of evidence that these experimental vaccines are neither safe nor effective. The government is ignoring that evidence. Many good doctors, like Dr. Hoff in Lytton, BC, who began reporting adverse neurological reactions to the vaccine, have been punished even for speaking out. Mainstream media and social media allow only government opinion, and the warnings of world-renowned doctors and immunologists have been slandered as misinformation. School children, who are at virtually no risk of dying from COVID, have been bullied into taking these experimental mRNA vaccines, sometimes without their parents' knowledge or consent. These injections apparently do not prevent infection or transmission. If they did, why would anyone worry about the unvaccinated? Even worse, they have produced more adverse effects, including deaths, than all previous vaccinations combined. NDP leader Jagmeet Singh supports these coercive vaccine passports. Erin O'Toole promises to create his own national vaccine enforcement system. I'm privileged to be the national leader of the Christian Heritage Party of Canada. We believe in personal autonomy. No Canadian citizen should be forced or coerced to participate in a medical experiment against his or her will. That violates both our Charter of Rights and the Nuremberg Code, which calls for free and informed consent to any experimental medical procedure. This is only one of many burning issues in our country today. Our shattered economy, our national debt, the Liberal gun grab, bankruptcies, suicides, and drug overdoses all soaring in the wake of crippling lockdowns. The censorship of alternative media and opinion, residential school survivors and families still waiting for answers. It's time to return to the basic principles that made Canada a great nation: decency, honesty, frugality, and justice, respect for innocent human life, traditional family values, and freedom. The freedom to make one's own medical decisions, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom to own and operate a business, and the freedom to raise our own children according to the dictates of conscience and common sense. We want our democracy back. I'm Rod Taylor, and I'm asking for your support.
Thank you, Rod. And now joining us to wrap up the opening statements from Paraguay via Zoom, Adina Young.
I'm coming to you from the traditional and unceded territories of Haida Gwaii in the Haida Nation. Guljat anga kilslai anga hada lasis, dilang wadluan aus keltlagum, diu au hadagum, ga odas gustu di kalagum, diu jatlanus gagum, jet kinjas askan wasalkanas hinudi had kil nanalam kyagum, kun au hinudi au had kil kyan, kun jadas hinudi had kil kyan, Adina Young Hinudi Yatsabekyan. Chiefs and people held in high regard, good people, I thank you all for listening to me tonight. I belong to the Jasonis Eagle Clan living in Masset. My late grandmothers are Wasalkanas and Jetkinjas. My mother's Haida name is Kun Au, my Haida name is Kun Jadas, and my English name is Adina Young. As an Indigenous woman, truth and reconciliation is extremely important to me. The UN talk about free, prior, and informed consent with Indigenous communities. However, I believe it is a tool that can be used in other areas of government when it comes to changes that inevitably happen with governments. While I can't pose to know everything, I can assure you that I'm coming from a place of respect and reciprocity. With respect and acknowledgement of the government, its powers, and its systems, I know we must move together collaboratively. The divide and conquer party lines will have us lopsided, and there will be severe consequences if there is no equality. I am ready and willing to transfer the 10 years of local political knowledge and experience I gained to the federal government. As I get comfortable being uncomfortable, I would like to remind us that as a Green Party representative, it is my responsibility to amplify your voice in the House of Commons. I would like to thank the team for having me attend virtually and to thank each and every one of the candidates for putting your names forward and the time, commitment, and passion you all have for running in this great nation. Good luck to you all, and may the best representative for us be held in high regard with much respect and dignity. Thank you all again. I look forward to the rest of the days ahead, and good luck.
Thank you, Dina. That concludes our opening statements for the evening. Once again, my name is Tom Barker. I'm the editor of the Interior News in Smithers. And tonight I'll be questioning the candidates on industry, which we could also call economy. But in this riding, of course, those two things are pretty much inextricably linked together. The candidates will each have 1.5 minutes to answer the question. All of the candidates have rebuttal cards that they may use to challenge or to answer the question themselves, at the discretion of myself and the other moderators from the other sections. If that rebuttal raises a question to the original answerer, then they will have an additional 30 seconds to answer that question. Once again, we randomly chose the order for the questions, and my first question tonight is for Rod Taylor of the Christian Heritage Party. Your party is best known for its positions on social issues and more recently the government response to the COVID-19 pandemic, but your platform isn't nearly so well articulated on industry and economics. For example, the resource management plank on your platform on the National Party website focuses entirely on the Atlantic ground fishery. What is your policy for industry specifically related to the scheme of bulky value?
Thank you, Tom. Well, people need jobs. Producing useful and needed products is essential for our economy, for family survival, and for every individual's personal growth and self-esteem. Canada is blessed with many natural resources, oil, gas, water, timber, minerals, farmland, and extracting these resources safely, efficiently, and in an environmentally sound manner is a challenge and opportunity for innovative entrepreneurs and hardworking individuals. Canada can be and should be energy independent. We must have control of our own food supply as well. All of our products that are sold offshore should be value added. Raw bitumen, for instance, from Alberta, should be upgraded in Alberta and refined on our coast, not shipped raw off our coast to other countries where the safety and environmental standards are not as high. Our timber should be processed with lumber into lumber in Canada, not in Asia. We think a job is the first and most important thing that we can provide for anyone in this country, and I hope the North has the kind of growth and development that we need.
Thank you, Rod. Does anyone want to respond to that? Okay, good. Moving on, a question for Adina Young from the Green Party. The crux of your party's plan for industry is to transition to a green energy economy sooner rather than later. Northwest BC remains primarily a resource-based economy with major long-term projects in oil and gas, LNG, and resource extraction industries. How practical is the Green Party's plan for Skeena Bulkley Valley, and how do you plan to protect the thousands of livelihoods in the riding that depend on those industries?
Thank you. With industries within the Skeena Bulkley Valley riding and how we're going to protect the numerous, the big numbers of employment. We do have a just transition transitioning from oil and gas companies, employees, and transitioning to a greener energy. There is a plan in place that is going to take some time. And in order for a transition to happen, it's also going to include conversations that have to happen with the employees and with industry in order for us to be able to secure the plan even more so, so that they have benefits that they have with the industry employers, and so that they, you know, they still have an income that is coming in. The Green Party have those transition plans in place so that we can start looking to renewable energy and reducing the amount of development that is happening with the pipelines today.
Thank you, Dina. Anybody? Okay, moving on to Claire Rote from the Conservative Party. The Conservative platform on industries clearly pro-oil and gas, pro-pipelines, and pro-resource development. And there is a lot of support for that in this region, but there is also a lot of opposition. How do you, as a Conservative MP in a Conservative government, balance that divide in Skeena Buckley Valley? For example, would you support lifting the ban on oil tanker traffic on the North Coast, as your party attempted to do as recently as February of this year?
Thank you for the question, Tom. I think that as a federal representative, it is your first priority to make sure that you are taking care of as many of your constituents as you possibly can. And that involves sometimes doing some hard work and getting involved in those communities and those First Nations to find solutions that work for everybody. Obviously, we can't always make everyone happy, but we have to do our best to make sure that we are taking care of the people here in Skeena Buckley Valley, our environment, and our economy. I think that one of the biggest factors in that is looking towards Indigenous-led and community-led projects when it comes to our resource sector and industry in general. And so I think that that's a really important aspect that often gets forgotten about. If we can find ways to get the communities working together on these projects, we can get the social license for them. When it comes to the tanker ban, I wasn't involved in government when this legislation was proposed. I've heard a lot of conflicting information from different constituents about people that are for the tanker ban, people that are against it. But I think that when it comes to issues like this, I'm never going to force my own personal views on my riding. It comes down to doing the consultation with the people that are living here in Skeena Buckley Valley and ensuring that the conversations that have already happened are being respected. So I think that it's important that we actually put more focus on a marine response program to effectively deal with threats to our water. Obviously,
okay. Thanks. Sorry. We have a rebuttal from Taylor Backer, NDP.
Thanks, Tom. People in the Northwest, all up and down our watersheds and up and down our coast, First Nations, municipalities, communities of all kinds, and people from all walks of life stood together to stop the Enbridge Northern Gateway Pipeline and tankers on our coast. And I'm deeply troubled that the Conservative Party has indicated that their priority is reversing both of those things. Our coast is precious. I want you to know that I will stand up for it.
Claire, did you want to respond to that?
Thank you. I believe it's disingenuous to say that we are looking at reviving Northern Gateway. The comments that the leader made were taken out of context. That project's a perfect example of what not to do in the pursuit of reconciliation with Indigenous people. We're not advocating to revive the project, and if a proponent was to revive it, our main goals would be making sure, first and foremost, that we had better terms for First Nations in the communities and that there was more consultation that was being done. But personally, I'm not focused on that. I'm not focused on dredging up past debates to drive a cynical wedge in an already unnecessary election.
Okay, thank you. All right. The next question is for Joey Craven of the People's Party of Canada. The foundation of the People's Party position on industry is to take the shackles off deregulate, untax, and leave it up to business to drive an economy that will be good for everybody. That policy kind of harkens to the Reagan era trickle-down economics. How do you propose to convince voters of that trickle-down effect can work in Canada and not just contribute to growing economic inequality between the wealthiest Canadians and everybody else?
Well, first of all, with any industry going into Canada, we have to have a sit down and really listen to our Indigenous people first. That's the number one thing. Next, the equality, jobs, and all that. Yeah, we invite industries in Canada, and but first of all, Canada has the strictest and highest regulations in Canada and on the planet. So we have to go by these restrictions, talk to the elders and chiefs on the territories, talk to the companies, and talk to the district or the province. So on. Thank you.
Thank you, Jody. Anybody have any? Seeing none, move on to the final question of this segment, for Taylor Bacharach of the NDP. The NDP seems to be trying to tread a very fine line between its traditional support of labor in all industries and challenging the Greens on transitioning to the green economy. Your position on the North Coast oil tanker ban is very clear, but you've been much less clear on other resource-related issues. Where do you stand on Coastal GasLink, LNG, and pipelines in the Northwest?
Thank you, Tom. The LNG Canada project is a big one, and I talk to folks about it around the region almost every day, if not every week. I talk to folks who are deriving huge benefits, significant benefits, who are gaining their employment from the project, and I talk to people who have real concerns about the impacts. Our responsibility as leaders is to grapple with the reality that's in front of us. And that's my pledge to this region, that we need to maximize the benefits, ensure as many local people are hired as possible, ensure that communities have the infrastructure they need to support the workers who are here, and we need to minimize the impacts. One of the big impacts is 4 million tons of greenhouse gases per year, and that calls on us as a country to redouble our efforts in almost every other sector to ensure that we can meet our international commitments. That's going to take a lot of work.
Thank you, Taylor, and I see a rebuttal from Rod, and then another one from Claire.
Yeah, of course, this referral to the greenhouse gases and all that, opens up a whole question about what those greenhouse gases are, what they do. I'll just say right off the bat, carbon dioxide is not a toxic chemical. It is a natural beneficial gas that plants depend on for living. But in terms of pipelines, other pipelines in the Northwest, I just want to say that I am in support of efficient, safe, and environmentally sensitive development and installation of pipelines. I think most of the First Nations people that I have talked to personally are also in favor of the natural gas pipelines, and many are working in that industry, as well as other non-Indigenous people in our area. So these projects are well underway. There's a lot going forward, and we need the jobs in our community.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Claire?
Thank you. I would simply like to know why our current member of parliament voted against standing in solidarity with every elected band council on the Coastal GasLink route, and the vast majority of the Wet'suwet'en people who support the Coastal GasLink project, and to condemn the radical activists holding our economy hostage. He turned his back, in my opinion, on Northern First Nations people, 20 bands and First Nations who support the CGL pipeline, and I would like to know why.
Taylor?
Thanks, Tom. I'm happy to answer that question. I voted against it because it held a mistruth, and I think voting for motions that are not true is against the interest of the people of this region that I represent. But I did, Tom, I wanted to come back to part of your question, because you kind of framed up a bit of a dichotomy between working people and the concerns around the environment. And I really think that's a false dichotomy. I talk to working folks all the time that are really concerned about what's happening to our environment. We need to take care of working people, we need to have a thriving economy, and we need to take action on the climate crisis.
Okay, thank you, Taylor. Somebody was signaling, does Adina have a response?
Yes.
Adina Young from the Green Party.
Thank you. My question is around the Indigenous communities and recognition of hereditary and electoral elected chiefs and hereditary chiefs. I'm wondering, what does the NDP have planned for the territories, the unceded territories, where the oil and gas pipeline development and extractions are going to happen in those territories? What do you have in mind to mitigate through the differences, and how will you recognize the hereditary chief system when it comes to development within territories?
Helen?
Thank you for the question, Adina. It's an important one. I think these issues of Indigenous governance are really questions for Indigenous communities and Indigenous nations themselves. Certainly in cases where Indigenous people want to use their hereditary system as their governance model, I fully support that. Other nations choose other models. I think that's something that's really inherent in the self-determination that the UN Declaration talks about. So these are complex questions, and I support providing Indigenous people with the resources they need to answer those questions.
Okay, thank you, Taylor. That concludes the industry section of tonight's debate, and concludes my participation. I want to, once again, as I always do, thank all of the candidates for their service to democracy. We certainly appreciate it, and we certainly appreciate you being here to answer the questions. Thanks, Ian.
Oh, sorry.
Jeff Blagan from CFNR will be moderating the next session.
Thank you, Tom. All right, so my name is Jeff Blagan. I'm the news director at CFNR, and today I will be moderating the Indigenous Affairs Center. The rules are going to be similar to last time, and then I have to answer the questions, you all have your rebuttal cards. Before I start, I would just like to mention that all of these questions have been compiled by community members today, so they are coming directly from them. First, we're going to start with Rod, who are going to be number one for today. As we know, one of the big stories going around all of Canada right now is residential schools coming to light once again. So if elected, what would your government do to address and start to make amends for the atrocities which continue to come to light committed at residential schools?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Probably one of the most important questions in our district, Metro District. A residential school, I want to say unequivocally, were wrong. I think that's recognized by almost every Canadian. It was wrong to take children away from their parents. It was wrong then, it's wrong now, and the nation of Canada has a deep apology to make for that. Stealing or subverting Indigenous cultures is also wrong. That's also taking place, that's not all in the past, that's taking place today in many public schools. They're not residential schools, but they're places where people's culture are being taken away, and that's Indigenous and non-Indigenous people who are having their cultural values stolen, the values of their parents. And of course, I want to say too that, and I think most of us would agree with this, the burning of churches is also wrong. Two wrongs don't make a right. I understand anger, but we need to get control of this situation and have a discussion, not a conflict. Socialists are using the tragedy of the residential schools to create racial division, and that is a tragedy in this country. We need to be coming together. We need to heal and restore. We are one Canadian family, and we have to work together for healing and reconciliation.
Thank you. But as I mentioned before, Mr. Rod Taylor from the Heritage Party. Does anybody have any rebuttals? All right, moving on. The next question will be for Mr. Taylor Bachrach from the NDP. People in the Northwest were a driving force behind and obviously have a vested interest in the inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. How does your government plan to address and utilize the recommendations made in that report going forward?
Thanks for the question, Jeff. It's such an important one here in the region that includes the Highway of Tears. Our party is committed to implementing all of the calls to justice that are included in the National Inquiries Report. The reality is that the progress has been far too slow across the country, and we need to do more. We're committed to that. When I was the mayor, I worked alongside other communities and with the provincial government on transportation options. Transportation is one of the things we can do to increase people's safety when they're traveling through our region. But the calls to justice call for much more. They call for us to look at the institutional racism in our institutions, to work on the safety systems that are so necessary, to work with law enforcement, to ensure that the reforms are there that are needed, and to ensure that a lot of what makes people vulnerable are the conditions that they live in and the conditions of poverty here in the region. And far too many people face those conditions. We need to alleviate it with things like affordable housing, affordable transportation, affordable costs of living in all regards. That's our commitment.
Thank you. Okay. Two rebuttals here. Rod kind of got his a little earlier, so we're going to go to Rod Taylor from the Christian Heritage Party first.
Well, I worked at Whitsitt for 9 years in the lumber industry. We attended church out there for about 15 years. I know people who were directly affected with the missing and murdered Indigenous women situation, who have lost loved ones, suffered that not knowing what's going on, not knowing why, and never finding out. So that's obviously a tragedy. But what I want to draw your attention to, and especially our NDP member here, is that aside from the missing and murdered Indigenous women, there are missing and murdered Canadian girls, pre-born girls, 2 million of them, killed by abortion in this country. And they are missing, and some of them are Indigenous, some are non-Indigenous, but we should be thinking about them. Those are mothers who have lost their pre-born children through either through miscarriage or abortion. So I want to think about those missing and murdered little girls as well.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Clara Tate from the Conservative Party of Canada.
Thank you. I would just like to know from our current MP what it is specifically that he has been doing to work on the issues around transportation along the highway. For nearly 2 decades, we have NDP representation at a federal level, and we haven't seen anything change when it comes to the issues around lack of transportation. And we're seeing more and more women and girls going missing, and it feels like lip service is being paid to the families that are missing loved ones, and nothing is actually changing. So I would like to hear what specifically he has done or he's planning to do to ensure that we get proper transportation along the highway and that this is no longer an issue.
Mr. Bachrach, you have 30 seconds to respond.
Sure, thanks for the question. Starting in 2012, when I worked in local government, I began advocating for better transit connections, public transit connections between Northwest communities. It's one of the recommendations of the Highway of Tears Symposium from 2006. And I worked with amazing advocates like Brenda Wilson and other communities and the provincial government. And in 2017, we got an agreement with the provincial government to put buses on our highway connecting communities all the way from Prince George to Terrace. I think that's a huge achievement. It's better now than it was before.
And
we have
so
much
more for your time, Mr. Bachrach. Sorry about that. Moving on to the next question. This one is for Claire Rattay from the Conservative Party of Canada. What can be done to increase the effectiveness and availability of mental health, addictions, and abuse support services in Indigenous communities, particularly related to women?
Thank you for the question. So specifically around when we're looking at things like mental health and addiction services, our platform actually has a lot that is specific both to Indigenous people and non-Indigenous. One of the main things is we're going to be investing $1 billion over 5 years to enhance the delivery of culturally appropriate Indigenous treatment and prevention programs, because we've seen how effective they can be for both Indigenous and non-Indigenous people that are struggling with addiction, and ensuring that recovery is the overarching goal and getting those struggling with addiction the help that they deserve. Also, when it comes to mental health, we are looking at making probably the biggest investment in a very long time into mental health for mental health services for Indigenous people. Exact numbers so that I don't speak out of turn, sorry. $1 billion over 5 years to boost funding for Indigenous mental health services. So it will be the single largest investment in Canadian history for mental health services for Indigenous people, and it's desperately needed in our riding. And I think one of the most important things is that if we have a member that is sitting in government, that is in government, they're going to be able to advocate to make sure that those resources and that money is actually put into our riding where it's so desperate.
Thank you. Any rebuttals from anyone? Thank you, Mr. Peck. Moving on to the next question. This one is for Dean Young. The affordable housing crisis has hit the Indigenous community, especially seniors, particularly hard, and many are finding it difficult to afford to live within their home territories. How will your government work to make it easier for Indigenous, and particularly seniors, to afford to remain at home in their home territories? And how is Dean Young doing?
My apology, but I'm having a little bit of a hard time understanding the question through Zoom. It sounds a little bit muffled. I apologize.
I'll do my best to repeat it for you as clear as I can, okay? That sound good right now?
Yeah, let's give that a try.
Okay. The affordable housing crisis has hit the Indigenous community, especially its seniors, particularly hard, and many are finding it difficult to afford to live within their home territories. How will your government work to make it easier for Indigenous, and particularly seniors, to afford to remain at home?
Yeah, I can't really make out the end of the question.
How will your government work to make it easier for Indigenous and particularly seniors to afford to remain at home in their home territories?
Affordable housing has hit the community hard. How will your government work to make it easier for Indigenous and elders to remain in home territories?
In their home territories.
How will your government work to make it easier for Indigenous and elders
for them to be able to afford to live in their home territories? Many of them are having issues with their pensions right now as far as being able to actually afford to live within the territories that they call home.
Affordable housing, I apologize, I'm just trying to get my the sound correct, and I hope I'm answering things to the way the question was asked. So to declare housing affordability and homelessness the national emergency, redefine affordable housing using a better updated formula that accounts for regional variations across the country, immediately appoint the Federal Housing Advocate as established in the National Housing Strategy Act, and support for renters, investment in housing, increase access to housing for people with disabilities. You know, there's a number of things that we can draw on from the party platform. And I think part of making this work is really being able to sit for myself, to be able to learn more and hear the affordable housing crisis in other areas other than within Indigenous communities. I will have to create the time and the space for me to be able to hear what the struggles are for larger communities.
Thank you, Sam. Is there anybody having any votes? All right. sounds good. We're going to move on to the final question for this segment. This one is for Mr. Jody Craven from the People's Party of Canada. What can be done to facilitate better negotiations between Indigenous parties and resource development companies early on to prevent the situations from escalating, as they often seem to do?
Well, first of all, building a relationship with all Indigenous communities is key. During the relationship building, I would like to work with those communities and work together to find solutions and conversations with the elders, chiefs, and martyrs. But saying that, with the Indigenous issues, we have to look after their suicide rates five to 11 times greater than Canada. We've got to abolish the Indian Act, recognize the treaties, and respect their land. Their health care, their diabetes, heart disease, all up. Education is a key factor. They need higher education, less incarceration, etc. And we've got to fix the broken families. The housing issues, fresh water, right? Trudeau government promising fresh water forever. And I'd like to make a comment on the unmarked graves and the missing indigenous ladies. In 1861, the Liberal government was formed. In 1870, residential schools were formed. So 150 years, the Liberal government didn't do anything for these people. I will. The missing Indigenous women on the highway.
I'm going to need you to wrap up there, Mr. Craven. Your time's almost up. Just wrap up.
Missing Indigenous women on the highway. Our leader, Max Bernier, we paid respect to these ladies, and we had two senior elders, Tom and Roger, to do some songs for us. And I just want to acknowledge the missing women.
Okay, thank you very much. And Dana, you did have a rebuttal.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if I'm able to ask all the candidates there a general question, or am I only able to rebuttal or make a comment to one candidate?
You can ask a question.
Ask one general question to all the candidates would be, what does it mean, what does truth and reconciliation mean to you, and how will the acknowledgement of traditional territories reflect in your party's responses to what truth and reconciliation is?
Okay, since I think it's important for everyone to give their answers to this, I'm going to forego my outro and just say that Mr. John Crawford's going to follow me up. But if everybody wants 30 seconds to respond to that question, do so now. Let's just start before I go to Mr. Craven.
Well, true reconciliation, hard stuff to say now. We gotta get together, sit down, talk to the elders, martyrs, and the chiefs, come up with a solution, and get rid of the Indian Act and the treaties, or acknowledge the treaties, and respect.
Thank you, Mr. Craven.
Yeah.
Next up, Mr. David Backrack from the NDP.
Adina, it's a tall order to define truth and reconciliation in 30 seconds. I want to thank you for the question. The first piece is truth. We need to tell the truth about the relationship between Canada and Indigenous people. It's been a very hard one, and it's been based on some fundamental injustices since the very beginning. Secondly, we need to deliver justice working alongside Indigenous people. We need to ensure that all of the recommendations and reports that I mentioned earlier get fully implemented. And it's a
thank you, Mr. Backrack, in 3 seconds. Thank you so much. Mr. Rod Taylor.
Truth
truth is important in every issue facing Canadians, and certainly in this area it is very important that we no longer allow the sins of the past, the crimes of the past against Indigenous people to be covered up with lies. It needs to be exposed and revealed, and in the healing light, sunlight, perhaps we can find reconciliation.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. And lastly, Ms. Clara, taking the conservative part.
Thank you. I think the truth and reconciliation means doing the hard work of tackling issues that are actually going to improve the lives of Indigenous people across this country, not just cherry-picking recommendations from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Especially the calls to action 71 to 76 involving missing children, because it's incredibly important at this point in time that we provide healing for the families that are grieving.
All right, this is segment number 3. I'm John Crawford from Bell Media, CRTK TV, radio. And this section deals with climate change. And the order as drawn will be as follows. Claire will be first, then Taylor, then Adina, then Jody, then Ron. So the first question to Claire Tay. Aaron O'Toole recently announced his plan to roll back Canada's climate change reduction targets. He wants to return to the previous national target of 30% reduction in emissions by 2030. As we mentioned earlier, he's also talked about resurrecting the Northern Gateway project. And the party earlier this year rejected adding the phrase climate change is real to the policy book. Now, given this year's evidence, the unprecedented heat wave BC had and the terrible wildfire season, how do you justify the conservative position on this issue?
Thank you for the question. Having read the policy book many times, I can tell you that climate change is most certainly in there, so I don't think that that's true. But we need to protect the environment without doing it on the backs of hardworking Canadians or burning our economy. It's important that we have a plan that meets our targets and reduces emissions. And independent analysis actually found that our plan would effectively achieve the same emissions reductions as the government's current plan in 2030, while resulting in a boost to the economy and jobs. Instead of sending your money to Ottawa, a low carbon savings account would help Canadians make greener lifestyle choices while letting them decide what works best for their families. And that's one of the things that we're proposing, because we think that Canadians know how best to live greener lives, and I think that all Canadians are in favor of doing that. But like I said, we can't do that on the backs of hardworking Canadians either.
Any rebuttals? Seeing none. The next question then to Taylor Backrack. The NDP has promised to end fossil fuel subsidies and to spend money on green energy, but how would such a scheme work in the short term when so much employment relies on the oil and gas industry, which is in place right now? And that includes, of course, the LNG Canada plant currently being built in Kitimat with the support of the provincial NDP.
Thanks for the question, John. When we end fossil fuel subsidies, when we stop subsidizing the source of greenhouse gas emissions and start investing that money, it's billions of dollars. One estimate was $18 billion in 2020 alone. When we start investing that in the new energy economy, we're going to create thousands and thousands of jobs. But the really important thing here is that the science tells us what we need to do to avoid the worst impacts of climate change. So it's not about simply doing what's easy or convenient. We have to do what's necessary. And that, because we've seen 30 years of delay and denial, that is becoming a larger and larger challenge. We need to get on it now, and the NDP has a plan to do just that.
And we have a rebuttal from Clara
Jane. Thank you.
And I think, Jody, did you hold it up to?
Yes. So my question would be around those subsidies. They have dramatically increased under the Trudeau Liberal government, a government which the federal NDP has propped up and allowed to stay in power. And although during election time right now, the NDP leader speaks a lot about his distaste for the way that Trudeau has done things, he has also publicly stated that if a conservative government was to win, they would make a coalition government with the Liberals to ensure that the Conservatives would not be able to take power. So I'm just wondering how that works out when you're saying that you want to end those subsidies, but you're propping up a government that essentially has rapidly increased those subsidies to oil and gas.
So first of all, I think it's important to clear the record that our leader said no such thing. But secondly, there is an important question there, which is this Liberal government has increased subsidies to the fossil fuel industry, and that's not something we support. We don't support the government of Canada buying an oil pipeline that's been shown that it's going to lose money. This is not the way that we tackle the climate crisis or the climate emergency, and an NDP government would reverse that.
Thank you. Joe?
You're mentioning about green jobs here, but on the other hand, we'll be losing 70% of all Canadian jobs. They rely on natural resources one way, form or the other. So I just don't understand how green jobs are going to make up those 70% of lost jobs.
Thanks for the question, Jody. I don't think that's the case. I don't think that that's true. We know that already in Canada, the clean energy economy is creating thousands and thousands of jobs. Some of those jobs are right here in the Northwest. That's where the world is heading. It's where international investment is heading. And what we need to do as a region is we need to ensure that we're going to where the future economy is going to be. We're future-proofing our communities and our region, so we have good jobs for people, for families here in the Northwest.
Thank you. Rod, did I see?
The CHP opposes all subsidies of industry, not just oil and gas industry. The Canadian government should not make it their business to be shelling out taxpayers' money to business of any sort, whether it's a car plant, whether it's oil and gas, whether it's the media, for instance, the CBC getting $1.5 billion a year to tell us things we don't want to hear or that don't agree with reality. And picking and choosing in the media, like Trudeau gave $595 million to the media sources that agree with him on policies and is curtailing funds to those who don't agree with him. So we don't think the government should be picking winners and losers. The government should be keeping our borders safe, maintaining just weights and balances, and helping Canadians stay protected from the kinds of moral undermining that is going on in our country.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Adina?
Is that for myself, Adina?
I think Adina's card came up.
Okay. My question is around, I want to bring it back a little bit to relationship building and what it means for industry development on unceded territories of Indigenous people within our riding. We see very clearly the divide and conquer that government roles have played in pipeline development and expansion, what it looks like in Indigenous communities. So how do we feel, you know, we talk about truth and reconciliation, and at the same time we want, other governments may or may not want to expand or continue oil and gas pipelines. So I think the question is how will your government walk hand in hand with truth and reconciliation and natural resource extraction, given the fact that Indigenous communities are of cultural identity and come from natural resources? Thanks.
And was there a response to that? I think Taylor, this is still your question.
I'm wondering if you can just repeat the last part of the question, John. My apologies.
It was around cultural identity. Indigenous communities come from the land. For example, the Haida are of salmon and cedar. That's how I culturally identify. So how will truth and reconciliation and industry development walk hand in hand with your government?
So reconciliation is about the land, and we need to acknowledge that, and we need to you know, I believe, be more respectful of the aspirations and the decisions of Indigenous governing bodies. And we need to allow the space for them to make those decisions using the governance systems that they choose. I've been deeply inspired and moved by my conversations with Indigenous leaders throughout the Northwest. I was just down in Heiltsuk territory a few days ago.
All right, we have...
I'll leave it there. Back to you, John.
Our next question is, this is question number three now, and this one to Medina Young. I hope you're hearing us okay. The Green Party's climate change plan calls for, among other things, an end to fracking, which would likely imperil the LNG Canada project in Kitimat, could put it out of business. The plan's been called somewhat effective but very costly by an analysis done by a professor at Simon Fraser University. And the Liberal plan, on the other hand, was endorsed by former BC Green Party leader Andrew Weaver. How do you respond to that and appeal to voters in this riding with the Green Party's climate change plan?
Thank you for the question. So the Green Party's climate change plan calls for, among other things, an end to fracking. The Green Party have a transition for workers in that regard. And the plan has been called somewhat effective but very costly by an analysis done by Professor. So I think my response to that is costly. I think the dollar value is something that the Green Party are willing to make the changes accordingly to. The dollar value is not going to be as much as the catastrophic global warming will have if we don't act on it now. And the plan, I think, can be interpreted as not that effective, maybe due to the high expectation and the big goal that we have set ahead of us. But collaboratively, we can all work together, and we have that opportunity as the Green Party to work very closely with our constituents and hear everything that they have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we move on to question four now. This question to Jody Craven, the People's Party of Canada. Your party has said that there are uncertainties over the scientific basis of global warming and no reason for government intervention. The PPC has said it would withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement and would abandon what it calls unrealistic emissions reduction targets and would end subsidies for green technology. Given what we've seen here in BC this summer and the mounting evidence that climate is changing, how do you justify positions such as these?
Well, the climate's always changing since the dawn of time. But we're going to get out of the Paris Accord, then if the provinces want to do their own carbon tax, that's up to them. But we're not going to enforce any carbon tax at all. We're going to get rid of it. But we have solutions for the garbage. We can get rid of 90% of all the garbage in Canada. To reclaim that land, we can plant trees. Plastic, we can recycle. And it's called Renewalogy. I'd like everyone to look that up. Forest fires, we know we have forest fires every year, but we don't plan for it. We don't build water bombers. We don't do anything like that. And the government refuses help. The Paris Accord, out. Carbon tax, out. And that's it.
And I see no rebuttal cards up, so we move on to question five. And this is to Rod Taylor, Christian Heritage Party. Where does your party stand on the issue of climate change, given the evidence that we're seeing this year and in other years? What policies do you have to address the situation that we're finding ourselves in today?
Well, as Jody said, climate has always changed over thousands of years. We have had global warming, we've had global cooling, and we will always have that going on. The climate change based on man's production of CO2 is an unproven theory. Just because it's been repeated 100,000 million times doesn't make it true. Canada produces 1.5% of the world's carbon dioxide. So we could shut all ours down and wouldn't make much difference in the world. But we would hinder our own economic development. We in CHP do care about the environment, clean water, air, and soil. We need to stop polluting our water, air, and soil with man-made chemicals. We need to end the dumping of raw sewage into the oceans. I mean, that's something that's so obvious, I don't know why we need to say it again, but it is still happening. We need to end the plasticization of the oceans. That is a real environmental problem. We're very concerned about that. We need to take steps, strong steps, to ensure that that comes to an end. And we're also concerned about the moral pollution. We have a moral environment in Canada that is polluted. And today also, Canada is polluted with the innocent blood of 4 million pre-born human beings. And we are paying the price for that. And if there is any man-caused climate change thing that we need to be concerned about, it's we are violating the precept of the Almighty who created us.
And I'd like to finish by thanking all five of the candidates for turning up tonight. It's not sixth, but you all have safe travels going home. And I turn things over to our vice CBC colleague.
Thanks very much. I'm Matt Allen with CBC Radio in Prince Rupert. My topic is on social issues, housing, mental health, and addiction. The question order will be Adina Young first, Jim Craven second, Claire Rettie third, Rob Taylor fourth, and Taylor Backrack fifth. And these questions, they do include a mix of questions from the public. So, first question for Adina Young. Can you, sure that you can hear me okay? Is that okay, Adina? Can you hear me? Adina, can you hear me?
It sounds okay so far.
Okay. One of the most pressing issues facing the Northwest right now is housing, as we touched on earlier. Vacancy rates are low, and with increasing rents and property values, it's becoming increasingly difficult, not only for low-income families, but lower middle-class, and even in some cases middle-class families to find living space. So if elected, what specific things would you do to ease that burden for families in that range, in that middle class to lower middle class range, find homes in the Northwest?
Thank you. It sounds like your question was around the affordable housing, is that right?
Yes, for not just for low income, but for low, middle, and middle income.
So we're looking, the Green Party, sorry, I'm looking at my notes for anybody who's watching the screen, but we're looking to reinvest in the affordable housing, nonprofit, cooperative, and supportive housing, protect the existing stock of affordable housing by funding and purchase of buildings by nonprofit and cooperative affordable housing organizations. I can say that on a personal level here on Haida Gwaii, that one of the issues that I see here are outside industries or business people buying up homes and buying homes here within this small community and turning them into Airbnbs or tourist attractions, which is making the housing crisis even more so than it already is. And that is something that I would be able to speak up about in the House of Commons. And sorry, I'm just trying to see what the question is because it was a little bit... and to help ease the burden of the crisis and with COVID-19 for us in the riding is really to work on the information that has been provided over this time of COVID, where we, is that time?
That is time, yes.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. I don't see any rebuttal cards, so we'll go on to the next question, which is for Jody Craven. And this question comes from Crystal Rancourt. What is your party doing to support trans people in Northern BC in acquiring gender-affirming surgeries and resources considering the rural setting of Northern BC?
Can you say that again, please?
Sure. What is your party doing to support trans people in Northern BC in acquiring gender-affirming surgeries and resources considering the rural setting of Northern BC?
Wow, what a question. Well, our party's against SOGI 123. This is being taught in our classrooms to young ages. When a person reaches adult age, that's their choice. They can do whatever they want. But funding from the government, it shouldn't be allowed. It should come out of their pocket. But the SOGI, we have to re-look at this education program and start teaching the kids the proper way.
Thank you very much. I don't see any rebuttal cards, so I will go into the next question, and that is for Claire Ratté. Do you support the Liberal plan to confiscate guns from law-abiding, background-checked, registered Canadian gun owners? Does your party have a funding plan to crack down on the smuggling of guns for gangs in Canada? And that question came from Gordon Bonnemont.
Thank you. I don't agree with it. I think Liberals are demonizing law-abiding firearms owners, and at the same time, they're introducing new measures to reduce sentencing for criminals that are charged with illegal gun offenses. It's confusing, it's hypocritical, it doesn't do anything to deal with the actual issue, which is crime. We have many people that live in this riding that rely on firearms to be able to hunt and provide for their own families. Food security is an issue that we have here in the north, and although many people in populous cities and urban centers may not understand why we rely on them, for many people that live in rural and remote areas, it is important to have access to that. I've heard from many of the people that live in areas like East Lake and Biscuit, that if these measures were to go into effect, it would dramatically impact their ability to provide for their families, so it is something that I would be fighting against.
Thank you very much. I have a rebuttal card from Jody Creed.
It's not a rebuttal, it's a statement. People's Party of Canada, we support ownership of guns, so we won't be taking any drastic restrictions away from people. It's their personal property, it's theirs. If criminals will get guns, they'll get guns. So we'll have stricter laws for the criminals obtaining guns.
All right, Mr. Rotelli.
The Christian Heritage Party supports the right of citizens to own firearms for hunting, sporting use, and for self-defense. It is important that our private property not be tampered with, and the Liberals, that's a lot of virtue signaling about violence. They should have done more about crime and about the devolution of human morality in this country, where people want to kill one another, want to hurt one another. That takes place whether it's with a knife, a shovel, or a firearm. We need to get back to being a society where we care about each other, where we don't hurt one another, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, etc., etc. And firearms are just a virtue signaling tool of the Liberals to say that they're doing something about crime and they're not.
Thank you. No more rebuttal cards, and we'll go on to the next question, which is for Rod Taylor, and this comes from Friday Daily. How do you ensure that a high quality and culturally grounded childcare system is accessible to any family wanting it, and that early childhood educators are compensated fairly?
Well, the highest quality and most affordable childcare system is a mom and dad. And one of the biggest problems in our country is that so many kids are being raised without both a mother and a father in a home. That's family to disintegrate. We've taken away some of the moral structures that support strong families. And so we don't think that the government should be in the child care business. We think the government should be reducing taxes so both parents don't have to work. If they're going out to work, they need child care because they both have to work to pay their taxes. So there's lots of ways that we can deal with that. But it's not the government's responsibility to look after children. That is the responsibility of the parents.
Thank you. I see no rebuttal cards, so we'll go on to the last question, which is for Taylor Backrack. The province saw a 34% jump in the number of people who have died from drug poisoning during the first 6 months of this year compared to the first 6 months of 2020. What should be done to slow down and reverse this trend?
Thanks for the important question, Matthew. It's over 20,000 deaths since 2016 across Canada. And it's an urgent, urgent issue. In the past week, I've knocked on four doors and had the door answered by a parent who's lost a child to an overdose. This is a crisis in our region that is affecting so many people. We need to end the stigma around drug users. We need to ensure that there's treatment on demand. We need to ensure that for people who use drugs, we have a safe supply of alternatives to the toxic street drugs that are killing people. And we need to stop treating drug users as criminals and treat this issue as a public health crisis, which is exactly what an NDP government is going to do, declare a health crisis when it comes to overdoses in this country and save lives, because it's important and they matter.
Thank you. I will turn it over to Penny Paul.
Hello. Welcome again, gentlemen. The order for Penny Paul from the Terra Standard, and we will be dealing now with the COVID-19 segment. The order, as decided, was Taylor Backrack, Julie Craven, Medina Young, Rob Taylor, and Claire Rattie. So here's the first question for Mr. Backrack. Our federal debt is mounting and is reported to be well over $1 trillion. We can't manage this by increasing taxes alone. What is your approach to dealing with this on a national level, and what could our region's role in this be? The question was sent to us by one of our community members, Rolf Wake. You have 1 minute 30 seconds, Mr. Backrack.
So I believe you said at the beginning this is the COVID section, correct?
Yes.
So I'll speak about it in the context of this public health crisis that we're dealing with as a country. Now, when the pandemic set in and we started to realize how serious this was, Canadians wanted more than anything for their government to get them the help that they needed. They wanted their government to take the steps necessary to save lives. And that was an unprecedented event, and it's still with us today. And it did cost money. But this is what Canadians wanted us to do. This is what Canadian businesses wanted us to do. This is what we needed to do as a country. And you sent me to Ottawa to do what's best for this region, what's best for Canada. And I think that what we did as a smaller party in the House of Commons, we fought for the wage subsidy, we fought for the CERB program, we fought for the business loans, we fought for help for people with disabilities and seniors and Indigenous communities. They needed that help, and it did cost money, but we're one country, and we need to support each other. It was the right thing to do, and I'm glad that we were able to get the wins for Canadians that we were able to. More people got help over the past year and a half because of the NDP MPs in the House of Commons, and I'm proud to be a part of that effort.
Thank you, Mr. Backrack. We have a rebuttal from Rob Taylor and then Claire Rattie.
Well, we're over $1 trillion in debt now because our Liberal Prime Minister, supported by his NDP colleagues, think that money grows on trees or you can just spend it and more will come in automatically. The predictions about the devastation of COVID that were in the beginning, when none of us knew anything about it, they were vastly overblown. One thing Canada did not do is it did not implement its emergency plan. We had emergency plans in place that have never been activated. We never did a cost-benefit analysis about what it costs the country to shut down industry, to shut down schools, to shut down churches, and quarantine healthy people. So these things should have been done long before they started throwing money around that they don't have. And our grandchildren and great-grandchildren will be trying to pay that off, and a lot of it has been wasted. Sorry to say.
Mr. Becker, would you like to respond to this?
Well, just to ensure that the record is clear, every party in the House of Commons voted in favor of the major COVID relief programs that were put forward. We pushed to make those programs better to ensure that Canadians who were struggling got the help that they needed. But it was a moment that I think as a country we can be somewhat proud of, that in a time of crisis, in an emergency, a public health emergency, we were able to come together and get millions of Canadians the help that they needed. And a lot of that help came right here to businesses and people in the Northwest. Thank you.
Claire? Thank you. I would just like to do a bit of a follow-up to give Mr. Bacharach more time to answer the original question, which I believe was more so around what is the NDP planning to do to recover the economy, because we are over $1 trillion in debt now. And I think that was the purpose of the question, and I'd like to hear what the NDP's platform on that is.
Mr. Bacharach?
I'm happy to take a couple of more moments. One of the things we're going to do is we're going to rebalance things in terms of who pays for these costs. A lot of people in this country are working hard, they're paying their taxes, a lot of folks are struggling to get by, but there are a few huge corporations that are doing billions of dollars of revenue in Canada and pay almost no tax. There are people who are stashing their wealth offshore, they're evading taxes, they're not upholding their responsibility to this country, which I think everyone will agree is to do your share. So we're going to rebalance that. We're going to ensure that they pay their fair share, and that's going to help not
Thank
only with
you,
the COVID
Taylor.
Recovery, but with other things as well. Thank you,
Mr. Taylor. Seeing that we have no more rebuttals, Jody, you have a rebuttal. Go for it.
Yeah, in the House of Commons, there's only three parties, NDP, Liberals, and Conservatives, I believe, that are pushing this agenda 2030. So this is why they cannot get out of this COVID relationship at all, because they're getting told what to do by the United Nations.
Ms. Becker, do you have a response?
Well, I'll just say that there are four parties represented in the House of Commons, five if you include the Green Party. And just to be totally frank with you, Jody, I didn't understand where you were going with the rest of that.
What it was is everybody signed on to this agenda.
I think I have to stop that. Thank you, Jody. The next question, moving on. Mr. Craven, this is for you. The pandemic highlighted a severe shortage of infrastructure, especially within the health sector, and speaking of Northwest BC with regards to doctors, hospitals, beds, etc. If elected, what do you propose to do about it?
Well, great question, because I just came out of the hospital. I support the frontline nurses, first responders. I do not support mandatory vaccines for these people. I do not support these mandatory passports. Consent under fear or duress is a criminal offense. And everybody that's pushing this will be charged. We have a document here from the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedom, Section 2A, B, 7, 8, 9, and 15, Universal Human Rights, Nuremberg Code, 1947, and the Helsinki Declaration. Vaccinations is a choice. They cannot force anything on you guys. It's illegal. So if you're worried about your job, we have lawyers set up, and we have a document right here for anyone that wants it. Thank you.
Thank you, Jody. We have a rebuttal from Claire first, going by Adina next. Mr. Taylor, did you have a rebuttal?
Not really, no.
Okay, thank you. I would just like some more clarification, because I believe that the question was, what is your party's plan to do more to attract healthcare
workers to
address the shortage.
To address the shortage. So I would just like to give Mr. Craven another opportunity to maybe finish where he was going with that, about how his party is going to attract more healthcare workers to the region.
All right, well, Mr. Craven.
How do you attract health workers, not get rid of them? Right? They're fear of their job right now. We're losing nurses by the handfuls. And coming from a conservative candidate, I think all you guys should be vaccinated. Are you, Claire?
Adina, moving on to your question.
Thank you. My question is around how we support the healthcare workers and not supporting the passport. How will you work with the safety the safety guidelines that are put in place with the province? We talk about sometimes the left hand's not talking to the right hand. As an MP, how will your government support the provincial regulations and the guidelines that are being put in place?
Adina, was this question for Jody or Mr. Taylor Beckrack?
Jody.
Jody, you have 30 seconds.
Can you repeat the last little part there?
How will your party work together? How will your party work with the province and the safety guidelines that they're putting in place where businesses and extracurricular activities require first vaccination and second vaccination when they're attending events?
First of all, Trudeau gave John Horgan $1 billion for this COVID app, right? So that's a little bribery going on there. Any restaurant or establishment refuses anybody in their establishment, they can get fined. They cannot refuse anybody. They think the government's going to back them up in the court, they'll lose. Every court case that happened, they lost.
Thank you, Mr. Craven. Mr. Beckwright, did you have a question or a rebuttal?
I don't. I'm not sure if that original question was directed at me. Could you clarify?
No, she said it was
for me. Okay.
Thank you. Moving on to the next question. Adina, this is for you. If elected, how will the Green Party handle a global pandemic given the fragmented state of internal affairs within the Green Party?
It brought a little bit, but I think the gist of the question was, if elected, how will we establish policy around a pandemic with the struggles of the internal affairs? Is that the gist of it?
Yes, that's correct. You have 1 minute and 30 seconds.
Thank you. I think the internal affairs, I don't think has anything to do right now with the fact that we're in the middle of a pandemic. I think first and foremost, and at a professional level, we're all able to set aside our differences and to be able to work collaboratively and make decisions on behalf of the constituents and the country that we're riding in. But the plans that we have in place as the Green Party are to ensure that we have some safety measures in place for should another pandemic happen, making sure that the country has a stockpile of PPEs, looking at what it would take to, providing our own medications and what it looks like for the country to, just really bringing people in and bringing people together in order for us to prepare for another pandemic, should another pandemic happen.
Thank you, Adina. Do we have any rebuttals at this point, or does anyone want to answer this question differently? All right, seeing that, we'll move forward to our next question. That's for Mr. Rod Taylor. Mr. Taylor, how do you plan to address the divide created by vaccine passports in the Skinner-Balkley Valley?
Well, the best way would be to make sure we don't get vaccine passports anywhere in this country. They are illegal against the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. They're against the Nuremberg Code. And to allow that to happen, for any of our MPs to allow that to happen, is just unconscionable. The divide that has been caused by this handling of the COVID crisis, not by COVID itself, but by the way the government has handled, is really tragic. It's divided communities, it's divided families, it's divided churches. It did not have to happen that way. The government should have followed its own emergency guidelines. And answer, I don't know how much time I got there, but Taylor Backrack said, who's going to pay for it? Who's going to pay for this reckless deficit spending that's being thrown away during this time? That, you know, and he said, who's going to pay for it? You know who's not paying for it? MPs who gave themselves a raise this spring. Bonnie Henry, who's making about $300,000 and tells everyone to be kind. Mr. Ford, who has a company making those, selling those arrows that you put on floors of stores. Pfizer and Moderna and AstraZeneca that are making billions and billions of dollars and have no indemnity. No, they are immune from being sued for damage. If you take their product and you die, you cannot sue those companies. And they're raking in the chips with a captured...
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Do we have any rebuttal for that?
Yeah, put my foot up.
I'd
like to mention this about this vaccine passport. It's about freedom. We had 250,000 men and women soldiers died in the war for our freedom. Think about it, people. You want the government to track you everywhere? All your personal items, health care, everything on that card, and they'll track you forever. Your kids and ever. So think about it. It's about freedom.
Mr. Taylor, do you want to respond to it?
Well, I didn't feel attacked by it, but I would just say these vaccines, people should know. If you think you're being forced to take it for your own good, the vaccines are not guaranteed to prevent infection or transmission. Think about that. And neither Pfizer nor Moderna will say that they are, but they're happy to rake in the dollars from the governments that are willing to put you at risk and to force federal employees to take a vaccine that is still in the trial stages.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Mr. Backrack, you had a rebuttal?
Well, it feels like we're getting close to the end of the pandemic section of the debate, so I didn't want to lose the opportunity to say it's very important for people to get vaccinated. The vaccines represent our best tool for combating this pandemic, and I encourage everyone to go out there and follow the public health advice. If you're eligible for the vaccine, find out when you can get your first and second shots. It's what we can do for each other to keep each other safe. And that's one of the core values that we hold here in the Northwest.
A rebuttal will be met with a rebuttal. Mr. Craven?
I'd like to just remind everyone, Israel is the highest vaccinated country in the world. Almost 100% people. And they have the highest Delta variants right now. So the other thing I want to add, Denmark got rid of all COVID restrictions. They got rid of everything. They're not following the mask mandate, vaccination, anything anymore. So let's follow the real science and let's look into it deeper instead of following the Trudeau government and this Agenda 21. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Adina. Adina, would you like to go ahead with your rebuttal?
Thank you. How much time do I have?
You have 1 minute.
Okay, I first off want to reiterate what Taylor said. If you can get a vaccine, get a vaccine. As an Indigenous woman, I can relate to what vaccines are and how they help. Smallpox epidemic here on Haida Gwaii, I can go into history about that and what it is to be here in this time. Vaccinations are extremely important, and they are being developed and in place to help protect us as a community. When it comes to freedoms and my choice on whether or not I want to get a vaccine, that is entirely up to me. However, I'm not going to make my choice based on I'm not going to make it into a politicized thing. I think it's the vaccines are meant for protecting people, so I would really encourage people to get the vaccines. If you have the vaccines, please. Indigenous people were wiped out by smallpox, and we did not have the vaccines. Now we have vaccines to keep us safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Adina, for that. Moving on to Mr. Taylor.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that in the United States, they have the VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. And there are thousands of Americans who have died after taking the COVID vaccines, various types of them. In Canada, we're not following that so closely. Dr. Hoff in Lytton, who deals primarily with Indigenous patients in his area, and his was one of the, I think, as far as I know, the one house that didn't burn when Lytton burned. But he was giving the vaccine, and he noticed that some of his patients were developing extreme neurological damage after the vaccine. When he began talking about that, the response of the government was not to listen to him, and not to follow up and see what was happening, but to shut him up. And that's a tragedy.
Thank you. We're moving on to the last question of our segment, probably the last question of our forum out here, and this is for you, Claire. People are afraid that the introduction of vaccine passports sets a dangerous precedent for future health-related issues, with the government having more autonomy over individuals' rights and freedoms. In that sense, do you think vaccine passports are constitutional?
Thank you for the question. I'd like to start out with actually referencing something that was said to me earlier that I wasn't given the chance to respond to, and that's that I find it a bit hypocritical that the PPC candidate is saying on the one hand that nobody has a right to tell us we should be vaccinated or ask if we're vaccinated, and then yells across the stage at me and asks if I'm vaccinated. Not that it's anyone's business, but I am vaccinated, and at the same time, I'm opposed to mandatory vaccination. The reason being very simple. It's because Canadians have the right to make their own health choices. That doesn't mean that we are against vaccination. It means that every Canadian should have the right to have every tool that they need to make that decision for themselves. It's very simple. It's not about being for or against it, and the reason that we have that stance is because I believe that we're the only party that isn't looking to politicize this issue. I would encourage Canadians to make the choices that they feel are right for their own health standards and make those choices in an informed way. And I don't want to use my vaccination status to try and encourage people one way or the other. I think that it's important that we get out of this pandemic and that we start focusing on some of the other health issues that we're facing, like the opioid crisis. We've had a 79% increase in overdoses since COVID started. That's a serious issue. We lose 17 Canadians a day to the opioid crisis. And yet we're so focused on politicizing this issue that for whatever reason we can't seem to get back to work at a governmental level and work on any other issue it seems. So I'm hoping that we move out of this pandemic and that we can do so in a way that is fair to all Canadians and doesn't
break
anyone's rights.
Thank you so much. Do we have a rebuttal? Adina, did you have a rebuttal?
No.
Do we have any rebuttal for the session?
What was the original question? Because it was avoiding.
The question for Claire was, people are afraid that the introduction of vaccine passports sets a dangerous precedent for future health-related issues. So with the government having more autonomy over individuals' rights and freedoms, do you think that vaccine passports are unconstitutional?
Well, I might as well use my last rebuttal card. As I think Christian Heritage Party and People's Party, I'd like to reiterate that we're 100% against the vaccine passport because it's our freedom. Once you give that freedom up, you become into a police state and the government controls you. Thank you.
Did you want to respond there?
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I didn't realize that I hadn't actually answered the question appropriately. The Conservative Party is opposed to mandatory vaccination and vaccine passports. Obviously, there are other countries that are requiring vaccination to travel there, and the only thing the Conservative government has put forward is that we can't control those other countries requiring that, so we're looking at making an easy-to-use system for the Canadians that do choose to travel abroad and choose to get vaccinated.
Thank you. Any other rebuttals?
If not, with that, we come to the end of our question answers and this forum. Right now, gentlemen and ladies, you'll have 3 minutes each to prepare and give your closing statements. We will begin with Adina. Adina, you have 3 minutes starting now.
I want to say thank you to everybody who took the time to come out and share with us your questions, and to the moderators and everybody who were helping us be here tonight. In closing, I would like to just really remind people of what it is to be a Green Party member, and how being a Green Party representative in the House of Commons can really benefit you as constituents within the riding. The Green Party do not have whipped votes. So if there is something that is happening at the federal level that is not necessarily accommodating to us within the Skeena-Bulkley Valley riding, I can oppose and speak up and really share what works and what doesn't work for us within the House of Commons. I would really like to share with people the importance of truth and reconciliation for myself to be in this campaign. Truth and reconciliation, I think, carries a lot, because it will encourage a lot of conversations and time for me to really get to learn what people's successes and their struggles are. It's an opportunity for me to be able to build more networks. And when we're doing things like that, we really are moving forward and looking to a brighter future. As an Indigenous woman, I feel like I have been oppressed for a long time, and that I was born into this world fighting. Fighting is not a word that I would like to use for my campaign. Fighting is really exhausting, but when I can come together and hear the differences and to hear the commonalities of what party interests are, and the interests of individuals versus corporations, I think it's an opportunity to bridge a gap. I really feel like when we're talking about all of the different things that are social, that have to do with industry, that have to do with housing, one of the HIDA laws that we follow here are everything depends on everything else. So when we're going to make a decision in something in the health, or something with industry, something with logging, anything like that, it's my natural ability to think about what the ripple effect is going to be. So if I'm going to put forward something that is going to change how industry looks, or how we're going to move away from it, it's my natural ability to be able to reach out and talk to the people that are going to be directly affected and impacted by the decisions that we're going to make. As an Indigenous woman, I never had that opportunity to speak until, you know, I got directly involved with politics. So I would like you all to keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you, Adina. Going next to Mr. Ron Taylor.
Socialism has never worked anywhere. The most brutal dictatorships in the world have been built on socialist ideas, which sound so nice in theory, but always lead to horrific violence and suffering. Like the People's Republic of China, which has tortured and murdered tens of millions of adults and over 400 million pre-born babies. Like the National Socialist Party of Germany, better known as the Nazi Party. There's nothing so evil as a government that oppresses you, takes your money, takes your freedom, and claims to be doing it for your own good. The current government of Canada, operating on socialist lines but with an arrogant element of self-serving dictatorship, has violated every boundary of appropriate behavior. Their platitudes are offensive, and their agenda is total control. They have been supported by their fellow socialists in the NDP. When they extended assisted suicide to those suffering from mental illness, they were copying a page from Hitler's platform. The NDP was right there with them. When they weaponized their confused gender policies by attempting to criminalize parents and pastors for offering traditional perspectives to those seeking to escape a lifestyle they no longer want, the NDP and Erin O'Toole also were right there with them. None of the big three parties have a plan to get back to balanced budgets anytime soon, but this joyride on our grandchildren's taxes must come to an end. Today, with over $1 trillion in debt, Canadian taxpayers are paying out about $70 million in interest every single day. Interest rates will only go up along with inflation. Carbon taxes have already raised the cost of every single item you purchase. The NDP supports those liberal carbon taxes, and Mr. O'Toole will introduce his own carbon tax. The Christian Heritage Party will end the federal carbon tax, protect your private property, including firearms, introduce balanced budget legislation, reduce red tape for businesses, promote a stronger national defense, and fulfill the long overdue obligation we have to our veterans and their families. We support the family farm. We recognize the importance of food security and also that of energy independence. We will seek the resolution of outstanding issues arising from the unjust policies of the past that have harmed generations of Indigenous peoples. And we will roll back the coercive, manipulative, useless, and harmful federal response to COVID. We will block efforts to impose a national vaccine passport, and we'll defend the right of Canadian citizens to make their own medical decisions, to travel freely within Canada, to assemble indoors or outdoors without fear of persecution, and to publicly express their opinions. I'm Rod Taylor, National Leader of CHP Canada. Check us out at chp.ca. I'm ready to serve you, and I'm asking for your vote.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Claire, Ms. Rattay, it's your turn.
Thank you very much. I just want to start out by thanking everybody for taking time out of their busy lives at home right now and actually sitting down and watching this debate. It's really half the battle getting involved and making an informed choice when you go to vote. It's one of the most important responsibilities that you have as a Canadian citizen is to make sure that your voice is heard and that you go vote. I really hope that tonight was an opportunity for you to find out about the people that are running. And it's not an easy thing to put yourself on a public stage and ask for thousands of people's trust. And in that spirit, I would like to thank all of my opponents for stepping forward to represent us. Even if we disagree on many things, I know the hard work and sacrifice that is required. And although it can be tough, it is very worthwhile. I hope that you at home can see the choice that you have in front of you because it's a simple one. Are you prepared for another 6 years of deficits and deceit from your government, or are you ready for better? A fresh start for Skeena Bulkley Valley and for Canada, and a government that will put Canadians first with a plan to actually recover. Again, I hope I can count on your support, but most of all, I truly hope you get out and vote on September 20th. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rattay. Moving on, Mr. Taylor Beckrack.
Thank you so much, and thank you to everyone who has watched from home this evening. Jagmeet has a saying that when we lift each other up, we all rise. We're living through some incredibly difficult times, and the social fabric of our communities is stretched tight. We have important work to do together. We have important choices to make. Over the past 2 years, I've worked hard as your representative to bring your voice to Ottawa, to push for better, to ensure that people got the help that they need. I talked a little bit about the wins that we got in the House of Commons. It's work that I'm proud of, and it's work that we did in partnership with Chambers of Commerce and Indigenous leaders and municipal leaders all throughout Northwest BC, and alongside many of you. The NDP has a vision for a Canada that is more equal, more just, more fair, and more sustainable. And knocking on hundreds of doors over the past number of weeks, I know there are so many of you out there who share that vision. It's a deep honor to represent you as your Member of Parliament. I want to thank you again and thank the organizers for tonight's conversation. I hope I can count on your support and your vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Backpack. And with that, we come to the last candidate, Mr. Craven. You have 3 minutes if you wish to speak.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for coming here. I'd like to thank the Sioux Chan Nation for hosting this event and on their territory. I'd like to reiterate some stuff here. If anyone's in doubt of what their legal rights are, go to Action for Canada, Vaccine Choice Canada. Our party is about a choice. If you want to get the vaccine, that's fine, that's your choice. But we're against mandatory stuff, right? Mandatory passport. You're giving up your freedom. So this next election is the most important vote in Canada. Remember, most people in the history of Canada, you're not voting for yourself, you're voting for your children's freedom. So, there's a lot of crisis going on in our Skeena Bulkley. I want to mention one in my hometown. We
Real Tinto and the union, they're on strike. It's going to affect 900 people directly right away. Then it's going to have a ripple effect all through this riding and through Canada. Next is the tariffs. We have a tainted drug crisis going on. We have to work with the police and find out solutions and get it done. As being a volunteer at the food bank, these clients need help. These rent evictions, homeless, all that, we have to open up Crown land and city land. City has the power to open up land to build houses. The Crown has the power to open up land to build houses. Help these people out, right? We're all Canadians. Forget about giving money to foreign countries. Reinvest in our people. Thank you very much. Vote PPC for freedom.
Thank you, Mr. Craven. With that, we come to the end of the Skeena Buckley Valley All Candidates Debate for 2021. Thank you to all our viewers, candidates, and moderators. To catch a repeat broadcast of this event, you can watch it on Terra Standard's Facebook page, or you can catch it on Channel 10 on City West on Friday at 7 p.m. Thank you once again, and good night, everybody.